Welcome back, everyone. We're diving into a story today. One you probably think you know, but we're going to find some surprises along the way.
Definitely some twists and turns.
We're talking about Jacob coming back home after 20 years. And, well, you know, it's not just about seeing his brother Esau again. It's about, how do I put this? It's about wrestling with God, too.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
Our source here, it's a scholarly look at those chapters in Genesis 32 and 33.
And it goes deep. I mean, really digs into the layers of meaning, things you might have missed before.
So get ready, folks. We've got some serious family drama brewing, divine intervention. Oh, and a name change.
That name change, it really points to a big change happening inside Jacob.
Okay, so just to get us all on the same page, Jacob's been gone for 20 years.
Right. He ran away after that whole, the deception with Esau, stealing the blessing. He was afraid for his life.
Yeah, I'd be a little nervous about coming back, too, after all that.
And now he's coming back wealthy with the family. But here's the thing.
Esau's coming to meet him.
With 400 men.
Okay, now I'd be sweating a little bit.
Our source, you know, the author, they point out that Jacob's life, it's full of these struggles. He's had trouble with Laban, obviously Esau. But it's like he's wrestling with himself, too. You know, some inner demons, maybe.
So this encounter, this is like all those struggles coming together at once.
Exactly.
So what does Jacob do when he hears Esau's on the way?
Well, he starts sending messengers ahead. But he gives them very specific instructions.
Okay, like what?
He tells them to be super respectful to Esau.
You mean like bowing and scraping?
Basically. To call him my master Esau, and Jacob, he's your servant Jacob.
Sounds a little strategic, wouldn't you say?
Some people see it that way, yeah. Like he's playing it smart, being careful.
Knowing Esau's the one with the power.
Right. But the author of our source, they suggest there's something more going on.
More like?
They point to how Jacob talks throughout these chapters.
Like he's really changed.
Yeah, like there's genuine regret for what he did to Esau.
Okay, so maybe it's not just an act. So he sends messengers. What else does he do to get ready for this reunion?
He sends gifts. Lots of them.
To try and smooth things over. Like a bribe.
Could be seen that way.
Yeah.
But hold on. The word for gift in Hebrew, menha, it's connected to the word for camps, mahanaim.
Wait, didn't Jacob use that name, mahanaim, when he saw those angels? Like two camps.
You got it.
So even these practical things, like sending gifts, there's a hint of, well, of God's involvement.
The author definitely makes that connection. It makes you wonder, are these gifts just a desperate attempt to appease Esau or something more?
Something connected to atonement, maybe?
Possibly. It adds a whole new layer, doesn't it?
For sure. And of course, this all leads up to that famous wrestling match. Jacob's alone at night, and suddenly he's grappling with, who is this guy?
Right. And the text never says his name. Adds to the mystery, you know?
It does. But I was reading that there's some wordplay going on here. Something about the names.
Oh, yeah. The author of our source points that out. Jacob. Jabbok. The river he crossed and the word for wrestle. They all sound similar in Hebrew.
So it's like his whole life, his very name, it's all been leading to this struggle.
Not just a random fight. This is a pivotal moment.
So tell me, who wins this wrestling match?
That's the interesting part. The man, he can't beat Jacob, which is pretty amazing in itself. But he does dislocate Jacob's hip.
Ouch. So it's like a draw, but with some serious consequences.
Yeah, and then we see this shift in power. Jacob, even injured, he demands a blessing before he lets the man go.
So he's not backing down?
Not at all.
Yeah.
He's been changed by this encounter, even though he's hurting.
And this is where the big reveal happens. The man asks Jacob's name, like he is in control.
Right. And then he gives Jacob a new name, Israel.
Meaning he struggles with God, right?
Exactly. His struggle is now part of who he is.
Wow. So this new name, is it a burden or a badge of honor?
That's a great question. And speaking of questions, did you notice Jacob never learns the man's name?
Oh, yeah. He asks, but he doesn't get an answer. The man refuses.
He does bless Jacob, though.
Which is what he wanted, right?
Exactly. And Jacob, he realizes this was no ordinary wrestling match.
He names the place Peniel, meaning face of God.
He's come face to face with the divine, literally and figuratively. Our source compares it to Moses in the burning bush. God reveals himself. But there's still a mystery.
That makes you want to keep searching for answers.
Like a cosmic game of hide and seek?
With really high stakes. And we still have to see how this new Jacob, this Israel, handles Esau and those 400 men coming his way. Okay, so we've got Jacob, fresh from that intense spiritual experience, and now he's got to face the music, so to speak.
Yeah, those 400 men, that's a pretty real threat.
And he doesn't exactly walk in there unprepared, does he?
No, he arranges his family in a very specific way.
Like he's still trying to protect them just in case.
Right, Rachel and Joseph, he puts them at the very back.
Smart move, maybe. But you'd think after that wrestling match, he'd be a little more, I don't know, confident.
Well, the source makes the point that he's still carrying the weight of his past.
The guilt, the fear.
It's all there. So what happens when the brothers finally meet? This is where things get really interesting.
Yeah, lay it on me.
The text emphasizes the emotion of this moment.
Like what kind of emotion? Anger, fear.
It says that Esau, he runs to meet Jacob.
Runs. I was expecting some kind of standoff, posturing.
Nope, he runs to him and they embrace.
Oh, okay. That's not what I was picturing.
They weep, the text says.
So all is forgiven then, just like that.
It's a powerful moment of reconciliation. It makes you wonder about Esau.
Like what happened to him during those 20 years?
Right. We only see things from Jacob's side, but maybe Esau had his own transformation.
Interesting. But what about those gifts? Did they do the trick?
Actually, Esau refuses them at first.
What? He doesn't want them.
He says he doesn't need anything, he just wants his brother back.
Wow. Talk about a change of heart. So how does Jacob react to all this?
He's relieved, obviously.
Yeah.
He keeps insisting Esau take the gifts, though.
Maybe it's his way of trying to make things right.
A tangible sign of his remorse, yeah.
So happy ending then. They all ride off into the sunset together.
Well, not quite. Esau does something really surprising. He offers to go with Jacob, to protect him and his family.
Wait, what? From wanting to kill him to being his bodyguard? That's a big shift.
The source points to this as a testament to the power of forgiveness.
But Jacob, he turns him down.
Yeah, he politely declines. He says he'll trust in God's protection.
He's learned his lesson. No more relying on his own schemes.
He's putting his faith in something bigger than himself. The author says this is one of the key takeaways from the whole story.
It's about wrestling with your past, with your enemies, but most importantly, with God.
And through that struggle, you find transformation.
From Jacob the deceiver to Israel, he who struggles with God.
And this lays the groundwork for understanding the future nation of Israel.
A people who will also struggle, but ultimately find their place in God's plan. Speaking of struggles, the analysis keeps coming back to Jacob's injury, that dislocated hip.
Right. He limps for the rest of his life.
What's the significance of that? Is it just a random detail?
The source suggests it's more than that. It's a physical reminder of his encounter with the divine.
A mark of his transformation.
Like a scar. Yeah. It makes you think, what tendons are we carrying? What experiences have shaped our faith?
And do those experiences make us stronger, or do they make us question more? This whole deep dive has been eye-opening.
These old stories, they have a way of speaking to us, even today.
And the author connects Jacob's story to Abraham and Joseph, too.
There's this theme of crisis, of challenges that test their faith and lead to growth.
So it's not about avoiding the tough times, it's about facing them head-on.
And finding strength through your relationship with God.
Yeah, maybe we come out of those struggles with a new understanding of ourselves, of a deeper faith, like Jacob did.
Exactly. And maybe we walk away with a limp too.
That's something to think about. I think I need a minute to process all this. There's that part about the Israelites not eating the tendon attached to the hip socket because of Jacob's injury. It's like they're carrying that story with them, physically.
It's more than just a rule, right? It's a ritual, connecting them to their history, to their ancestor.
Not just remembering it, but living it.
And the author, they ask us to think about what tendons we might be carrying, what experiences have shaped our faith, what marks do we bear.
It's a powerful way to think about it. It's not just an ancient story. It's something that still speaks to us today.
Exactly. And it makes you wonder, do those tendons, those difficult times, do they strengthen our faith, or do they make us question even more?
This whole deep dive, it's been amazing. Like, I thought I knew this story, but now I'm seeing it in a whole new light.
It's incredible how these ancient texts, they have so much depth to them.
And I really like how their author connected Jacob's story to Abraham and Joseph. There's that same thread, facing these huge challenges.
Crisis moments that test their faith.
And ultimately, they come out stronger on the other side.
It reminds us that struggle is part of the human experience, even for these heroes of faith.
And it's how you deal with it, how you lean on God that really matters.
It's about facing the tough stuff head on.
And finding that strength in your relationship with God.
Exactly. And maybe, just maybe, we'll come out of it changed, with a new understanding of ourselves, a deeper faith, like Jacob.
Wow.
Yeah, that's a lot to take in. I think I need some time to sit with this.
We all do. It's a story that stays with you. Makes you keep wrestling with those big questions, you know? Keep
yeah.
Keep searching, keep going deeper, even if it's with a limp.
That's a great way to put it. Thanks for joining me on this deep dive, everyone. We'll be back soon with another fascinating look at the stories that shape us.
See you next time.